And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Wednesday afternoon. Bonnie, I know you always look forward to this program. You're such a great animal lover.
Yes, I do.
And you're going to be talking about that kitty of yours.
Yes, I am.
Kind of resembles a bobcat. I've seen it. Well, we present our At Your Service Pet Care Edition. We're joined by two regular contributors. First, veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kent. Welcome to you, Doctor. Good to see you again.
Great to see you, Joe.
And also joining us is Adele Mieres, who specializes in dog training and behavior. He heads South Florida's Canine Advisors. Welcome to you, Adele.
Thank you, Bonnie.
All right, full disclosure. So one of the focuses of the program today is why cat owners are skipping vet visits. And Joe just said he's seen my cat, but he's one of the only people who has. So I rescued
this. It's like seeing the snow leopard.
It's a very feral rescue kitty, mm-hmm. Okay? And he hasn't been to the vet since he was a kitten, which was 12 years ago. Okay? And I can't get him in a carrier, and he won't consider letting my vet that makes house calls even get near him because he hides. And I become a wreck, mm-hmm. which makes him even worse, and so I'm at a total loss. What can I do?
Well, you're not alone. That's basically cited as the most common reason why a lot of cat owners, much as they love their cats, don't come in to see the vet. First of all, you have to, for want of a better word, zen out, because cats are like little emotional mirrors. They pick up on stress. So the fact that you're stressed about taking your cat to the vet makes the cat think, why do I need to be afraid? And before you know it, they hide because they can see you dig out the carrier. They can see you basically making preparations to bring them in. And the big thing between cats and dogs is that, frankly, dogs you can bribe, you can cajole. Cats, they need to make their own decisions. So,
and we'll rip your arm off.
Exactly. So the first thing I always tell folks is somehow we need to broach the carrier issue. And one common way is for maybe a month. Feed, is it he or she?
A he.
A he. Feed him in the carrier. Put the food bowl right at the entrance to the carrier. Don't force him to go all the way back. He's not going to do it. But maybe even right outside the entrance for a week. And then feed him inside the carrier for a week, and then push the food bowl further and further back. Catnip sprinkled on the base of the carrier also helps, but make the cat just used to the carrier, because part of the thing is the carrier is usually kept in the garage, and when you take out the carrier, the cat knows, hey, oh, I'm going to the vet. So make it part of his world. And then one day, while on D-Day, if you like, C-Day.
You spring the trap.
You spring the trap. Now realize, vets everywhere agree cats should be seen once a year. So the good news is you only have to do this once a year, and hopefully 11 months after this event, he's forgiven you, and you can do it again.
Hopefully.
And once he's in the carrier, then it's your problem.
Then he's my problem.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The next problem is, how do you examine a cat that... I mean, I know I had one cat that was also very difficult, mm-hmm. and they used to gas him in the carrier before they could take him out.
Right, and that... And that is actually a very humane way of approaching it.
It is.
It really is. Starting from the entrance to the vet clinic, though, what you do is you carry your carrier in. Don't put it on the floor. Dogs are on the floor. Dog smell is on the floor. That's already a very vulnerable place to put a cat. Mm. So we actually ask our visitors to plonk the carrier on our counter as they come in. Cats love height. They feel comfortable. They feel secure. They can survey their dominion without threat. And so already you're ahead of the game because you've not exposed your cat to perceived threats. Secondly, ideally, we try to split cat and dog appointments so you're not coming into a waiting room full of dogs.
That's a good idea.
So that's nice. So we try to schedule the cat appointment, say, late in the morning when we've done all the dog things, and basically it's nice, it's quiet, it's like a library. So they're not freaked out.
And all you can hear are them hissing.
Right. And then finally, if it turns out that he cannot be handled without a little sedation, well, then we give him a little sedation. you know, a little gas. It's smell free, odor free, stress free.
And do you also give it to the owner?
Well,
because that's I good. Think they may need it.
See, that is a separate service.
We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke, and he's of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Also, we'll eventually hear from Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have a cat or cats, and do you take them regularly to the vet, why or why not? And if you have dog behavior issues, we're open, or anything else, it's open for you to call 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or you can email radio@WLRN.org, or you can also tweet us at Topical Currents.
Tell me, Adele Mieres, the other day I was watching some old documentaries and I came across the dog whisperer of TV fame, Cesar Millan. What do you think of his methods?
My methods are completely different. I don't subscribe to those methods from Cesar Millan. I have respect for what he's done, but there's just a number of things that I would never do in training that he does.
Such as?
Using,
he throws knees around sometimes.
Yeah, knees, ankles, tapping the dog with your leg, poking the dog with your fingers, things that supposedly that he says the mother does and things like that. One of the things that I subscribe to is hands on the dog are only for praise. And that goes for feet too. I usually just say hands. Hands on the dog are only for praise, which means that any time that your hand is coming to the dog should not think that you might be freaking him out to try to get his attention with your hands. Instead, the dog should always think that hands coming on the dog are just fine. It's not a threat. He doesn't have to worry about if a small child wails his hands around or if a stranger comes up to him to try to pet him. He doesn't have to worry if that hand is going to be a bad hand or not.
What about people who discipline their dogs by hitting them?
That's terrible.
And what should they do instead?
There's a number of different things, but most of the time when discipline is in order in most people's mind, it's actually not. What you want to do is actually divert the dog's attention with something else. Sometimes just a ruffling of a treat bag or a little squeaker ball gets the dog away from what they're doing and back onto you.
All right. We have a question for you, Adele. This is from Georgia. One of my 1-year-old dogs is really jealous of our 16-year-old dog. So she has 2 1-year-old dogs. He really attacked her over the weekend. I'm ready to give up the 1-year-old to the former rescue group. I'm scared he'll hurt people the same way.
It's a shame that people oftentimes mismatch the animals. Happens with dogs and cats and other animals, I'm sure. A 1-year-old with a 16-year-old already, I can tell you, the 1-year-old being into a teen, going into teenage years, and the 16-year-old way into retirement, generally not a good mix. However, in this particular case, the 1-year-old may actually be showing more dominance. And it's more about pack order. Dogs don't actually feel jealousy. It's part of the reason why they're man's best friend. But they actually, they're more pack order type animals. So basically, that 1-year-old probably needs a lot more structure and obedience from whomever the leader may be or should be in the household, the humans, before he's allowed to be reintroduced to the 16-year-old.
So she doesn't say if they're male or female. Would that make a difference?
It really doesn't. Okay. Generally, males and males or females and females tend to fight more. But it really does not. It has to do more with pack order and who's more dominant in the pack.
I know we can't herd cats, but can we train cats?
We can train cats. I've had a number of situations where people have called me ready to give up their cats because of what they call cat aggression, where oftentimes it's a displaced anxiety. And a lot of times it's learned behaviors that unfortunately the people themselves have taught the cat surrounding food and attention, two key resources that the leader generally controls.
I think you're implicating.
Let's take a quick call because we have to break. This is Emma in Miami. Hi, Emma.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of cats who live in the yard of the house that I just moved into. And I suspect that they're litter mates. They're very affectionate. They like to kind of come in from time to time. I suspect one of them is pregnant now. and I'm just looking for resources in terms of getting them some care at a minimal cost to myself. I think I like to, you know, feed them and pet them, but I don't know if I want them in the house all the time, and they seem pretty happy, you know, being outside in the yard, too. So I also wondered if it's safe to give a pregnant cat flea medicine.
Well, in terms of help with managing an outdoor cat situation, there is a group in Miami called Cat Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can find them online. They actually offer resources for taking care of spaying, neutering, kitten adoption, that sort of thing, at really minimal cost. In terms of flea preventative, you've got to be very, very careful what flea products you use. Most over-the-counter flea products are not safe for cats. You really need to consult your veterinarian and find a cat-safe product. And to be honest, I think I'd have to check the labels to make sure that the ones, even the ones that are
prescription. If they're outdoors, how can you really combat the fleas?
Well, basically, if they will allow you to be within arm's reach while they're eating, while they're noshing down, you just empty the vial on the back of their necks.
Right.
And that takes care of it once a month. My favorite product, probably Revolution. It's considered safe. I need to double check about whether it's safe for pregnant cats, but it's certainly safe for cats.
And I was also wondering, what is the gestation period for cats?
Quick.
More or less 63 days.
There. Oh my gosh, wow, that's fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Litter size 4 to 6 kittens.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good luck. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke. He's the owner and lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. And Adele Mieres, dog trainer and behaviorist, owner of Canine Advisors. And by the way, if we can't get to all your calls and emails, both gentlemen have generously agreed to give you their email addresses, and you can email them anytime. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It's At Your Service, Topical Currents. Our topic, pet care, Dr. Ian Kupke, and also dog behavior specialist, Adele Mieres. Bonnie, you had an email?
We have an email. My Maine Coon is nearly 2 years old. He was active until 3 weeks ago when he went from moving his bowels daily to every 3 to 4 days. He started to eat less, lost weight, became less active. Blood work was taken, along with an x-ray. Blood was normal, bowel was full, lactulose helped, but he's still going only 3 to 4 days and eating little. Changing his food has not improved his condition, and he's getting an ultrasound now. What's your opinion?
Well, this is constipation in cats, and unfortunately, it can be a very complicated condition. The preferable route is to manage it medically. Simply, what happens is the colon is not just a passive tube; it's actually very, very active. And in cats who have this tendency, the activity of the colon basically shuts down, and the colon ends up being a...
Could that be hairball related? Or?
No. It's a neurological issue, and it's relatively poorly understood. But when it happens, the cat literally doesn't go to the bathroom and gets constipated. Lactulose will help them, but if that doesn't, surgery is often the only solution.
And is that successful?
Most of the time, yes, but as you can imagine, it's a long road.
There's a long recovery from the surgery.
Well, the recovery itself is 3 weeks, like any surgery. But whether or not the surgery alone is successful, or whether they continue to need medical care, it's often a combination.
Well, and obviously, he's getting vet treatment if he's having an ultrasound. So.
Yeah.
Let's take a call or two. This is for Adele. Enrique in Miami. Hi.
Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hi there.
I want to ask you a quick question. I currently have a German Shepherd. She's about a year and a half. And I already did the training for her for obedience, and she passed it, and she's super smart. However, she started showing furniture. I bought her a few toys, and usually take her for a walk in the mornings. Then when I get from the office, and usually at night before, you know, we go to bed, but she's just being taking a lot of stuff from the backyard. My wife is about to just get out of the house. So I'm trying to find out, do I have to do any other type of training? Should I buy, I don't know, more toys? Should I probably use one of those sprays that you spray it on the furniture so that way they don't chew them? I mean, I don't know what to do with her.
Hi, Enrique. This is Adele. So how old is your German Shepherd?
She's about a year and a half.
A year and a half. Okay. She's right straight deep in her teens right now. She's equivalent to probably, what, about an 18-year-old right now. And what's happened is she's probably getting too much free time with a lot of stuff around her that she can chew up or mess up. So one of the most important things that you can do, some people can afford to have the dog, let's say, go into a daycare and have some additional activity. For those that can't, what we'll have to do is generally restrain the dog to a smaller area, perhaps like a kennel space, for example, when you're not there.
I try the cage, and it only worked for probably about a week or so after. I mean, she's loose on the backyard all day long, so it's not that I have her inside a place where she gets stressed out. She's usually loose on the backyard, but, I mean, the trainer told me just get a cage, put on a cage for like a couple of weeks. When she feels that she doesn't own the backyard anymore, that this is not owned by her, then that's okay. Let her out. And I did that. And after a week, she started showing everything again.
Right. That what I mean by a kennel, I don't mean like, for example, a small cage. I was talking about if you can set up a kennel in the yard, like a large, like a run, for example, for her to be able to run back and forth, but be kept in one particular space. Depends on the financial constraints that you may have. More than likely, she needs a little bit more structure than just the basics and obedience. Shepherds are working dogs. They're herding dogs. Oftentimes, one kept alone like that is more of an issue than having two of them to be able to play with each other. So there's a number of different factors here that we would need to consider. But the end result is that your dog is displaying anxiety and boredom type behaviors. Chewing things up and messing things up that she might have not done before because she's left alone for too many hours. So we either have to get her some companionship, take her out and give her some activity.
She hates dogs. She hates other dogs. I don't know why, but she hates them all.
Well, that's something we can certainly discuss later, but we can take dogs like that that we actually find a really, really good mate for them. I've done that over the years.
Okay, good luck. Thank you, Enrique.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then we could probably meet up.
Okay.
What?
That I was saying that maybe I just wait until you guys give the doctor signal on the air so that way I could just write back to him and then we could probably, you know, I'll probably take it to his clinic or something and maybe we could work something out.
Okay. His email is Adele, E-D-E-L, at K9advisors.com. That's the letter K, the number 9advisors.com.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Okay. Thanks, thank you, Enrique.
All right. Good show. Bye-bye.
Okay, Anne has written, my 20-year-old calico cat, a spayed female, screams piteously several times during the day or night. She eats well, sleeps most of the time. Mm-hmm. She does not appear to be sick or in pain. How can I stop the screaming? It's Anne in Boca.
Hi, Anne. 20 years old. Congratulations. That's wonderful. But I guess the million-dollar question was, when was the last time your kitty was examined by a veterinarian? Not really expecting an answer for that, but this exactly highlights the reason why vets want to see cats every single year. Cats, a change in their emotions, it can be an indication of something very serious underlying. Cats are very stoic. They keep signs of illness to themselves. They're very, very good at hiding signs of disease. And a cat that vocalizes excessively actually can be something as simple as thyroid disease, dental disease, some sort of source of pain, some chronic source of discomfort. A lot of the time, all you see in a sick cat is a violent change in their behavior. So at 20 years old, I can almost guarantee she probably has some dental issues. She may have a dental abscess, a dental cavity, some problem with her teeth, or something metabolic, but basically I would say a proper nose-to-tail physical exam and take it from there.
So we often don't know when our cats are sick unless, I mean, they get to the point where they're so sick that we notice a change in behavior. Is that it?
Really, that's it in a nutshell. Cats are not as domestic as dogs, which means that while in the wild animal world, a sick animal is a meal for another animal. So cats are pre-programmed to hide signs of illness until they can't hide anymore, which means that by the time we see the change, it's a big change. Mm. A lot of the time, too, we see our cats every day. I weigh a kitty I haven't seen in a year, and I notice a 2-pound weight loss. Owners surprised because they see the cat every day. They didn't notice a subtle weight change, but 2 pounds on most cats is huge.
Right.
And really, that in itself is a sign to investigate further. A quick listen to their chest, and you pick up a heart murmur you didn't hear last year, and yet the owner doesn't know about that.
If I can add something to what the doc is saying here, that metabolic change, I have noticed that is huge. I don't know a whole lot about cats, a little bit cat behaviors, but I have a 20-year-old, actually she's going to be 20-year-old Chihuahua. She's about 4 pounds. Long story, it's a rescue. But basically, I've had her for quite a few years, and I've noticed a decline, and she would do that same thing. She started doing a lot of screaming in the middle of the night, kind of like just wailing out, yelling. And I was just wondering why she seemed healthy and so forth. Well, something the doc just said, metabolic changes. That's really important to identify. When we get older, we have to eat less and smaller amounts and actually eat more often, much like we're babies. Very similar, I noticed with my Chihuahua, she's eating 4 times a day, smaller amounts. The yelling over the night is down.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's continue on with callers. This is Miriam. She's in West Palm Beach. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi. I have a cat. It's a feral cat that he had an abscess on his face 3 weeks ago, and he had it drained, and he has stitches in his face.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing well, and he's feral, so it's been very hard to try to catch him again, to take him in, to get the stitches taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if the stitches stay there?
Well, for my parts, whenever I know I'm dealing with a situation like that, I put absorbable stitches in so we don't have this issue. Even absorbable stitches can last several weeks, if not months. It's never a good idea to leave non-absorbables in, I'm afraid, because what can happen is that where the sutures are can get infected.
Oh, yeah. And you can see the stitches. They're blue, and the hair is growing around his face.
Wow.
He'll let me pet him, but as soon as I take the cage out, he'll take off and run, and I just can't. I have not been able to catch him a second time.
And that goes back to what we were saying earlier, is try to feed him near the carrier, eventually in the carrier. The longer you leave it, the harder it is to take the stitches out because the fur is growing back.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And it is. The hair is growing around it. Is this still going to be okay, doctor, to get him taken out then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just going to be a little harder, but not impossible. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, doctor, one last question, please. I also have another feral cat that I have separate from the other ones because he's got feline AIDS.
Ah.
I have him separate from the other ones, and he's crippled because he had he's got one of his legs can't move it.
Mm-hmm.
Can he still get sick? Because one of the vets said he can get sick, and then another vet told me that he could not.
They can all get sick. You know,
neutered.
Neutered. Yeah. He's neutered. Did you say?
No, he's not neutered. He has his testicles.
No, no. Neutering always a good idea. Spay and neuter.
Even if he has AIDS?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's... I would give a cat with feline AIDS prophylactic antibiotics just to be on the safe side, but I would still neuter him. No questions asked, and I'd have no hesitation putting him under anesthesia provided his other vitals...
Does feline AIDS spread through intercourse?
Well...
So if he's still...
Through feline intercourse, but also through cat bites. If a cat with feline AIDS bites a cat without feline AIDS, it's possible to get it that way too.
Yes, I have them totally separate from the other cat.
Okay, we have to run.
Okay, thank you, doctor. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're speaking to Dr. Ian Kupke, lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, and Adele Mietes, the owner of Canine Advisors, on today's Topical Currents. We'll take a short break, come back, take more of your calls and your emails. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. It's At Your Service edition. Bonnie Berman here with Joseph Cooper and Dr. Ian Kupke of the Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. We have an emailer. I'm a little perplexed by. Last time I took my cat to the vet, blood work showed, excuse me, signs of kidney failure. Uh-huh. Are the grain-free dry foods horrible for her? And are there any non-prescription foods you recommend?
Really, I wouldn't take the risk. Kidney failure is a very, very serious thing in cats. But if you use the appropriate prescription diets, you can often control it with diet alone. There's really not a good logical reason to not take advantage of these prescription diets now, because there's several. They've all stood the test of time, and I've seen them make a huge clinical difference.
Would that be like NF?
There's a Hill's diet, there's a KD,
yeah.
Royal Canin has a prescription diet. There are a number out
okay.
there, but they're all good. And honestly, no one ever became broke feeding a cat, so it's going to save you money down the road. Absolutely.
And back to the phones. This is Caitlin. She's in Jupiter. Hi.
Hi there. I have a question. Maybe both of your guests could help me. I had three cats for about 6 years, and one of them passed away in August. Around the same time, I rescued a feral cat. He's incredibly sweet. He loves to snuggle. He likes the other cats. One of my other cats hates him, cannot stand him, stalks him, tries to attack him. I've tried separating them, not separating them. I've given them herbal remedies. I've done everything I can think of, and since November, they're just not getting along, and I'm at my wit's end. I love all my cats. I don't want to get rid of any of them.
Well, you know, the short answer is no one likes everybody. You know, cats are sentient beings, and it's possible that these two are not going to be friends. But cats don't need a lot of room in a house to live separate lives. A lot of the time, people will actually feed and house one cat in one wing of the house and one in the other, and those two cats will coexist happily for years that way.
And what if it's a smaller
If
house?
It's a smaller one, then basically what I call conceptual partitioning, basically feed opposite corners of
okay.
your living space. Litter boxes, one litter box per cat plus one for
yes,
the house. Very important.
They have separate litter boxes, mm-hmm. And you know, they eat together fine, and it's funny because sometimes they will go on other ends of the house, and they'll be sleeping, and they'll be fine. And things are happening, like, I'll let them have free roam of the house at night, and we'll be sleeping, and, you know, two of the cats will be in the bed with me, and then the other one, at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, will jump on the bed and attack him.
Hmm.
So it's like, sometimes they get along really well, and then other times, you know, the one cat just gets it in his mind that he has to go out of his way to attack him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one person on TV I've seen that actually does make a lot of sense to me is a chap called Jackson Galaxy.
He's got a cat whisperer.
Yeah, you know,
seen him. Yeah.
Because you've got a rather specific situation there. There are a lot of tricks to the trade, but the one thing I have learned with cats is you can't force the issue. You know, feed them in separate wings of your living area, separate litter boxes, and eventually they may come round. But, you know, in many cases, you just have to be patient.
Let me ask you just something here.
Yeah.
Do you free feed?
No, they get fed twice a day. Sometimes they get lunch when they're really hungry because they have me trained very well. But no, they get...
That's great.
And they're on, you know, a really good diet. They get really nice wet food, and I take good care of their teeth. So, and then, like I said, they eat well together. When it's time to eat, they don't fight. They eat their food, and then they go about their lives. But they eat well together.
Okay, two other questions. Are they spayed and neutered?
Yeah, they're all male, and
they're all neutered. Okay.
But one of them, you know, and I've been listening to this show from the beginning, and I remember you... talking about the dogs that a really old dog and a really young dog may not get along. And the cat that is really angry, he's old. You know, he was adopted from outside, so I'm not sure how old, but he's like maybe 10 or 12. And this cat might be like 4. So I don't know if that makes a difference, but they're all male neutered.
It could very well make a difference. Like the doctor was saying, they may not all just get along, but there may be some things, like, for example, if you're lying in bed and you have two cats there and the other cats are coming in for attention, and then you're having a fight going on there. Attention and food are two key resources, so You may just want to actually pay attention to one cat while you have the other around in a relatively small room, maybe a small living room or a bedroom. Pay attention to one cat and not the other. As the other one tries to come around, just kind of snub them out of the way with the back of your body, your leg. Once the other cat moves away, then you go and you pet that other cat that moved away. And same thing with the food. You may want, I know they may all get fed at the same time, but you may want to one time feed one on purpose first and wait a little bit to feed the other one and change up that order so they each think that you're more of a leader and not either one of them to challenge each other.
I see. Okay. And when they fight, should I discipline them or ignore it or yell at them or be nice? Like, what should I do when they do fight?
We probably need to go a little deeper into that and see this case in particular before mm-hmm. giving any advice as to what to do if they bite each other. But I'm trying to give you preventative so that they don't bite each other.
Okay, we have to run.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye. Doctor, we have other callers wanting to know more about getting cats in carrier. You mentioned a couple of other methods.
Well, it's actually a very old method, but something that's worked in particular for indoor cats that don't want to get into carriers, and it employs the use of a king size pillowcase, and literally you roll the edges of the pillowcase down to form a circle, put it on your lap, and basically again. Several days before the event, just get used to the kitty sitting on your lap with said pillowcase.
Should you have oven mitts on,
well,
too?
You know, a lot of...
Kevlar mitts.
Well, yeah, you know, but once you basically slip the pillowcase over their heads, they actually are... They're very happy. It's a contained, quiet, safe space, and as long as you don't, you know, manhandle them once in the pillowcase, gently lay said pillowcase in the carrier, close the carrier door, and you're in.
Tell us about this thunder shirt. I can see how it would work for a dog, but for, you know, a skittish, fast, angry cat, I don't know how you get it on.
Tricky. I have to say I agree. I'm not really sure that if you can get one of these things on a cat, they probably don't need it. But there are a couple of other tricks. There's actually some feline pheromone products out there now. There's something called DAP, another called Feel Away, that basically they're natural feel-good hormones that don't have any effect on people, but basically will make a cat feel more at ease and more relaxed. We actually employ a DAP diffuser in our feline exam room precisely for that reason. And in fact, we get a lot done with cats. It requires a certain gentleness, a certain respect. Most of the time I find that with cats, if they object, you don't persist, you withdraw, allow them to reboot, and then gently try again.
Okay.
And don't allow yourselves to become impatient, because they feed on that.
On the same issue, and then we'll let it go. Sam in Kendall, hi.
Hi. I'd like to add an idea to the doctor's idea of how to get the cat used to the carrier. My girlfriend, in addition to having a number of beds around the house, and of course the cat sleeps anywhere she wants to, even on my girlfriend's face, but she has also put one of the cat beds on top of the carrier. Mm-hmm. Which sits nearby a large sliding glass door window, and the cat loves to sun there. And sometimes she suns on top of the carrier right. In that bed, and it becomes part of the furniture.
Exactly. So you're basically associating it with normal life as opposed to a traumatic event. The very worst thing you can do is keep the carrier in the garage, because cat's going to figure out when you pull the carrier in from the garage, it's V-Day.
They also do that when people start pulling out luggage.
Right.
I won't tell you the cat loves to go to the vet, but she's not afraid of it to the degree that others are.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. And you have another email, Bonnie?
Yeah, we have a lot of them. I found a feral cat about 6 years ago, trapped, spayed, returned it to the area. Basically, the cat has become dependent on her for food, and now she's moving to the fourth floor of an apartment complex and cannot take her with her.
Right.
This is Kieran in Miami. I can't find an organization that will take her because she's still feral.
Right, right.
My choices are to leave her behind or to trap her and have her euthanized. I would hate to euthanize her, but is it humane to leave her behind? Will she be able to fend for herself?
Well, again, I think that's a very good question for the Cat Network guys, because their remit is basically feral cat welfare. And it may be that
they come
have
out to your neighborhood
solutions.
And maybe take a look at the cat, or
they do that.
If possible,
yeah. They can do that, and they could maybe relocate Karen's cat to a colony.
I would discourage leaving the kitty to fend for themselves, because they've now become habituated to the feeding regimen, and if you do that, unfortunately, I see this a lot. People have to leave the cats behind, and they don't thrive.
No.
No, they get in trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, I hear of it all the time, cats that are left behind. They wouldn't leave a dog behind, I don't think.
No.
And cats...
Well,
actually, a lot of people have left dogs behind.
Do they?
Yeah, especially during the housing crisis.
Right.
Dog just left alone in a yard.
And
no
people
food
can't
or water.
Afford vet bills or something like that. And
it's ridiculous.
They're out
they
of work.
Yeah. They could at the very least take the animal to a humane society or a place they might care for.
By the way, June is Adopt a Shelter Cat Month. And Dr. Kupke, what are you doing at Sable Chase?
We're offering a free physical exam. There's coupons on our website, and also 25% off any vaccines your kitty might need.
Okay, that's good. And that's sablechaseanimalclinic.com.
Correct.
That's the website. And that's Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. Another short break. We'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Ian Kupke, and Adele Mietes. Right away, back to the phones. Marty in Coconut Creek. Thanks for your patience, Marty. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to start off by saying I adopted a little stray feral kitten. And because she was wild, I really have spent a lot of time trying to get acclimated with her.
Great.
So she's done really good. I just wanted to give a couple of ideas. I got her in her cage by just making it like a game. I pick her up and I put her in it and I leave the front door to it open. Mm-hmm. She just knows when she goes in, she can walk right out, and over time she doesn't think anything of it. Then what I did was, secondarily, I now take her for a ride in the car inside of her carrier. We don't go to a vet. We take a 10-minute ride around the neighborhood and come back. So she's calm and doesn't freak out when I put her in the carrier or in the car. So I've been able to get her to the vet.
Mm. Great, good.
Just some things to think about. Here's my question, though. Recently, she started getting a bunch of... The vet said they were like pimples all around her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the vet suggested that it was probably an allergy to some food. I used to give her the Costco dry food. So it seemed to get cleared up when I switched to Friskies or something like that a couple of weeks. And then I thought I'd buy her an upgraded food, and I bought Iams.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got them again. So I switched her back. Is it possible that maybe actually she's allergic to what may be slightly more premium type food, or you just have to play around with that? Or
well, you're on the right wavelength there. It's all about allergies. And cat foods are a mix of ingredients, grains, and meats. And it sounds very much like your kitty has an allergy to certain ingredients that were present in some of the foods and not present in others. And the problem is really that the foods you're trying have too many ingredients for you to really scientifically figure out what she's going to like and what she isn't. I would definitely recommend a limited ingredient diet. California Naturals, one good range, basically where you have one protein, one carbohydrate. Start her on a food trial for a month to 2 months. If you find the little black spots go away, well, you've hit gold. If not, then go to a completely separate primary protein, primary carbohydrate, and just work through the list there, and you should get success. The other thing is absolutely no plastic food bowls. They must be ceramic or stainless steel. Mm. A lot of cats are allergic to the plastic in food bowls.
Oh, okay. I see. I am using a plastic one. I have stainless for her water. Okay, I'll change that today.
Perfect.
One last question. The one thing, since she was wild, I cannot get out of her. She's got to go outside just to run around for a couple of hours every morning.
Right.
I, How do I do it? Do I just go cold turkey with her, or I really like her to be an indoor cat completely, but she goes nuts.
Well, it does take time. You know, there's dangers out there, disease, yeah. Trauma.
Cars.
There are people out there that don't like cats. There's dogs that don't like cats. Personally, I would try to do that. And then, as Adele was referring to earlier, make your indoor environment an attractive place. Enrich it. Play with your cat. Get a little cat tower, scratching post. Make it a fun place for...
I have all of those. You know, that's pretty good. Just get her out of the house. Going out in the morning.
Yeah,
huh?
Basically. Just distract her by indoor things. But a lot of people overlook how important it is to spend some playtime with your cat, like you're doing. So it shouldn't be hard while she's young.
And Bonnie, you had an email.
Oh, we have so many.
Well, pick one.
Well, I'm trying. I had one. Where is it? Well, anyway, what's the best method to introduce a dog to a 12-year-old cat who's never lived with a dog? Adele?
Well, that's interesting. A dog to a 12-year-old cat, it really depends on the dog. If you have a really high-drive dog, perhaps a vermin-hunting type of dog, then that's going to be a little bit more difficult to introduce to any cat. The cat is the older one there, so the cat's going to be a little less patient probably. As far as the introduction of the dog, usually I would just, as a general rule, have the dog get a little bit more structure and obedience from the individual. The individual should be able to walk the dog with no pulling, make sure they can open the front door and the dog doesn't bolt out the door, and the dog respects the individual, the human, enough so that when the introduction is made, the dog can actually be looking up to the human to see what is it the human wants out of him when that introduction is happening. When the dog just sees the cat and just goes, okay, forget you, human, and I'm going to just go and do whatever I want to do with this cat, then that makes it so much more difficult. Okay. So some leadership up front before the introduction is done. Generally with a cat, I'd have them, if the cat is comfortable in a carrier, I'd have them in a carrier a little bit higher, like maybe on a sofa or on the top of an area like a large chair, for example. That's safe for the cat, that if the cat moves around, the carrier is not going to fall over. And I'd have the dog just come around on a leash, and you'd have to gauge the response that the dog is giving you towards the cat before you move in any closer. I would likely use something of a high value for the cat and the dog as they pass by. Give them a little treat so there's a positive association. I would keep those introductions very, very short. Have them be like maybe a few minutes, and then you do the whole thing all over again in a few days. It might take a little bit longer, but you get each animal more comfortable with the presence of the other.
We're getting short on time, so how about email information for those listeners who want to contact?
Sure. My email is Edel, @canineadvisors.com.
And that's K9.
Letter K, number 9, advisors.com. Thank you.
And Dr. Cuppy?
Reach us at scac@sablechaseanimalclinic.com. sablechaseanimalclinic.com.
Okay, here's somebody after my own heart, Leslie. When I take one of my cats to the vet, he gets upset and poops all over himself in the carrier. At the vet, he behaves abominably, namely tries to bite the vet and staff. Should I sedate the cat?
Well, does the vet still achieve what was needed? A decent physical exam, vaccines if needed, blood work? I mean, is it a successful visit?
Well, you also have a mess in the car.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the tricks, honestly, is I would not feed that morning.
Okay.
And basically just treat it as you would a surgery visit. Because basically if there's nothing going in, hopefully there'll be less coming out. And the other gentleman summarized it nicely. Basically try to do a few blank runs that don't involve the vet. The carrier, the car ride, but no vet. And so stop having the transport event always associated with sometimes negative. Big difference between cats and dogs. My dog goes out with me every day. Cats never go out except to see the vets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do we have time? Do we want more
emails? I don't think
this
we
is
really
just
have time.
This is for you, Adele. My husband's visually impaired. They're considering having their 5-year-old standard poodle trained as a service dog. Is that advisable? That's from Kathleen.
We do a lot of service dog work. We've done contracts with the MS Society, Parkinson's Group. We do a lot of service dog work, and basically poodles tend to be some of the better dogs for service dog, but just because they're a poodle doesn't mean that they are. I'd get the dog properly evaluated and see if that dog will be good for that. A five-year-old is typically a little old for a vision-impaired individual.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Our hour is up. We want to thank Dr. Ian Cuppy and also Adele Mieres. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Great information.
Thank you. Wish we had 2 hours.
And thanks for listening. Apologies to those callers and emailers we couldn't get to. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Remember, we have free audio archives and downloads from our website, WLRN.org, and more information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program begins with a discussion of child abuse prevention in Florida. It's now law that anyone, not just caregivers, who suspect child abuse must report it. Also, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining with wine columnist Fred Tasker. And the calendar. On this day, 1922, 91 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court rules Major League Baseball a sport and not a business, thus not subject to antitrust laws. Tell that to Jeffrey Loria. Also on this day in 1942, 71 years ago, crooner Bing Crosby records the Christmas classic White Christmas by Irving Berlin in Los Angeles. It became the biggest selling single of all time. Even Bob Marley covered it. And one more before we head for the hills. On this day in 1953, 60 years ago, Edmund Hillary and Nepalese mountaineer Tenzing Norgay are the first to reach the peak of Mount Everest at 29,028 feet. The descent from the peak is considered more dangerous than the climb. So we leave with a thought from Bing Crosby, who was a pioneer of magnetic tape recording and invested heavily in the Ampex Corporation. Quote, "There is nothing in the world I wouldn't do for Bob Hope. There's nothing in the world he wouldn't do for me. We spend our lives doing nothing for each other." This is Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.